Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Welcome to the History AI Podcast, where the past comes alive with facts, anecdotes, and a dash of humor. Here are your hosts, Chuck and Marco.
Welcome back to the History AI Podcast, the show where two dudes with microphones and way too many historical rabbit holes break down the biggest moments in human history, and maybe throw in a dad joke or two along the way.
I'm Marco, your ancient tactics aficionado, lover of weird battle formations, and frequent Googler of did war elephants have armor?
And I'm Chuck, your go-to for all things dramatic, mythological, and totally unnecessary reenactments in my living room. And today's episode is a big one.
Huge. Like, change the fate of the world, huge. We're diving into the Battle of Gaugamela, Alexander the Great's epic clash against Darius III of Persia in 331 BCE.
Think of it as the Super Bowl of ancient warfare, except with more horses, fewer commercials, and way more existential stakes.
All right, let's paint the picture, and not with watercolors. This is full-blown, ancient world, end of an era type stuff.
We're talking 331 BCE. Alexander, still in his 20s, is on a roll. He's already taken down the Persian armies at the Battle of the Granicus and, more dramatically, at the Battle of Issus.
Issus was wild. Darius III himself fled the battlefield, leaving behind his chariot, his troops, and awkwardly, his entire family.
Yeah, Alexander ends up treating them with respect, but still, that's how bad Darius lost. His wife, mother, and daughters were basically captured like, hey, sorry your dad ran off. Want some wine?
Now by this point, Alexander has pushed deep into the Persian Empire. He's taken Tyre after a brutal siege, marched through Egypt, where he was literally declared a god by the priests at Siwa, and has now set his sights on the heart of Persia itself, Mesopotamia.
And Darius knows this is the big one. No more running. He's regrouped, recruited, and re-strategized. And this time, he's going all out.
We're talking an army estimated between 100,000 and 250,000 troops. Now, those ancient numbers are always a little fuzzy, but what's clear is, the Persian force massively outnumbers Alexander's.
And it's not just quantity. Darius pulls in every elite unit he can find, cavalry from Bactria, infantry from India, Scythian archers, Armenian slingers, and yes, the famous scythe chariots. Basically, a multicultural tour of the ancient world with weapons.
This is Persia saying, we are not just defending a throne, we're defending an empire, a civilization, a legacy that goes back to Cyrus the Great.
Now, Darius picks the battlefield near a town called Gaugamela, in modern-day northern Iraq. And here's the kicker, he intentionally chooses a wide, flat plain. Why?
Because he wants to unleash those scythe chariots and cavalry. Think of it like prepping a racetrack. He even orders the ground leveled, removing obstacles so his units can maneuver freely.
That's how confident he was. Like, I'm going to win this so hard, I'm smoothing out the battlefield for my victory chariot parade.
Meanwhile, Alexander's rocking about 47,000 troops, a mix of Macedonian phalanxes, elite companion cavalry, Greek mercenaries, light troops from Thrace and the Balkans, and even some Persian defectors.
But what he lacks in numbers, he more than makes up for in quality, training, and cohesion. His army isn't just big, it's a precision machine. These are veteran soldiers, drilled and disciplined to a scary degree.
And Alexander? He's not sitting in the back writing orders. He leads from the front, sword in hand, on horseback, in the thick of it. That kind of charisma and guts. That's why his men follow him to the ends of the earth.
So both sides know what's at stake. For Darius, it's a last stand to save the Achaemenid Empire. For Alexander, it's the gateway to the greatest conquest the world has ever seen.
All roads have led here. The stage is set. The armies are in place. And the most important battle of Alexander's life is about to begin.
Gaugamela isn't just a fight. It's the clash of two worldviews, East versus West, tradition versus ambition, empire versus insurgent force. And spoiler alert? Things are about to get messy. Okay, so the armies are set. The dust is rising, the sun's coming up over the plains of Gaugamela, and this isn't just some medieval free-for-all. This is tactical chess with blood, steel, and a whole lot of screaming.
Right, and here's what makes this battle legendary. Alexander doesn't just rely on brute strength. He thinks his way to victory. What you're about to hear is basically a clinic in battlefield psychology, misdirection, and exploitation of terrain.
Let's start with the basics. The Persian army was massive, but kind of a patchwork. You had conscripts, mercenaries, elite guards, but cohesion? Not great. Meanwhile, Alexander's force was tight, disciplined, and had fought together for years.
So how does Alexander deal with a force that could literally encircle him? He does something clever. He stretches out his own lines diagonally to the right. It's subtle, but brilliant.
Yeah, instead of facing Darius head-on, he angles his forces to the right, moving laterally as the battle begins. That forces the Persians to extend their line to match him, thinning them out and drawing some units away from the main Persian center.
That's tactic one, dilution. Darius's massive numbers don't mean as much when they're spread too thin to apply pressure all at once. But Alexander doesn't stop there.
Oh no. Next, he creates bait. He sends light infantry and cavalry out on the right to provoke the Persian left flank, mostly cavalry-heavy units. The Persians bite, charging forward.
And here's the genius part, Alexander wanted that. As the Persians chase his rightward moving troops, it opens a gap in the Persian line, right in the center, where Darius is positioned with his elite guard.
Alexander's like, thanks for the opening, and then bam, launches a full-speed charge straight into the heart of the Persian line with his companion cavalry. He's personally leading it with sword in hand.
This isn't just a tactical strike, it's psychological warfare. Darius, surrounded by chaos, sees the enemy racing straight for him. And remember, this happened before, at Issus.
Yeah, Darius had a little bit of post-Issus trauma. He panics again, abandons his army again, and rides off again.
Second time's not the charm.
With Darius gone, the Persian morale tanks. But here's the kicker, Alexander almost loses it. While he's breaking through the center, his left flank under Parmenion is in serious trouble.
The Persian right, led by Mazias, had broken through and was threatening Alexander's rear and the baggage camp. Some accounts even say Darius's forces got dangerously close to capturing the Macedonian reserves and non-combatants.
So Alexander has a decision to make, keep chasing Darius and end it right there, or double back and save his own army. And unlike a lot of conquerors, he chooses his men.
He pulls a tight pivot with his cavalry, sweeps across the battlefield, and helps stabilize Parmenion's flank. That maneuver right there might have saved the whole campaign.
That's what separates him from your average swing-a-sword warlord. He adapts mid-battle, reads the whole field, and makes real-time decisions with long-term consequences.
Also, fun detail, those infamous side chariots. Total bust. Alexander trained his men to open lanes in the phalanx as the chariots charged. Once they passed through, they were taken out by light infantry from the sides.
So yeah, sides on wheels, less Mad Max, more sad crash.
By the time the dust settles, the Persian army is routed, the battlefield is a mess, and Darius is galloping into the night, again.
It's not just a win, it's a masterclass in how to turn a numerical disadvantage into a strategic advantage. Textbook flanking, baiting, striking the psychological center of gravity, and all done in a day's work.
Alexander didn't just win Gaugamela. He dismantled the Persian Empire's ability to resist, and in doing so, reshaped the ancient world forever.
So, the dust settles at Gaugamela. Darius has bolted. Alexander's army, outnumbered maybe 5-1, is standing tall on the bloodied field. What happens next isn't just cleanup, it's transformation.
Yeah, this wasn't just the end of a battle, this was the collapse of an empire in real time. Darius's defeat at Gaugamela meant that the Persian heartland was now wide open.
Think about this, in just a few short years, Alexander goes from ruling a smallish kingdom in northern Greece to walking into Babylon, one of the greatest cities of the ancient world, like he owns the place. Because now? he basically does.
Exactly. Within weeks of Gaugamela, he takes Babylon. And we're not talking siege or slaughter, the city opens its gates. The locals welcome him. Because honestly? A lot of them were over the Persian administration.
And Alexander knew how to play the part. He starts dressing like a Persian king, adopting titles, preserving local religions. It's all part of his PR campaign to present himself not as a conqueror, but a legitimate successor to the Achaemenid throne.
Then comes Susa. Another key city, another treasury. Then Persepolis, the ceremonial capital of the Persian Empire and one of the richest cities on earth at the time. He takes it. And spoiler alert, he burns it.
Yeah, this one's wild. There's a huge debate among historians. Was it revenge for the Persian sack of Athens 150 years earlier, or a drunken mistake at a party?
According to Plutarch, it was a mix of both, egged on by a courtesan named Thais during a wild banquet. But regardless of the cause, the symbolism was clear: Persia is done. The old empire is ashes.
Meanwhile, Darius is still out there, kind of. He tries to rally a resistance in the east, but it's all falling apart. Loyalty is eroding. Eventually, one of his own satraps, Bessus, betrays him.
Bessus captures Darius, declares himself king, calling himself Artaxerxes V, and then, when Alexander gets too close, he straight up kills Darius and runs.
Which Alexander did not appreciate. He finds Darius's body, gives him a royal burial, and makes a big show of honoring him. Again, image matters.
Then Alexander goes full Liam Neeson. He tracks down Bessus, captures him, and executes him, reportedly in a way that mirrors Persian punishments, like mutilation and crucifixion. Brutal, but symbolic.
So by 330 BCE, just a year after Gaugamela, Alexander controls all of Persia. Babylon, Susa, Persepolis, and Ecbatana, the key cities of the empire, all under his command.
But instead of heading home, he keeps going. Eastward. Into Bactria, into Sogdiana, all the way into India. He's not just conquering, he's chasing an ideal. He wants to reach the ends of the known world.
And along the way, he keeps pushing this idea of fusion, marrying Persian women, adopting customs, training Persians in Macedonian warfare. He even demands his officers do the same.
Which doesn't always go over well with his Greek and Macedonian troops. There's tension. Culture shock. Ego clashes. But Alexander is trying to build something bigger than a kingdom, a new, blended empire.
And here's the big picture. Gaugamela didn't just mark the end of the Persian Empire, it marked the beginning of the Hellenistic world.
Greek language, art, science, and political ideas spread across the Middle East and into Asia. Cities like Alexandria spring up. Trade explodes. Cultures merge. It's the foundation for everything from Roman imperialism to Silk Road networks.
All of it, the whole ripple effect, begins with a dusty plain in northern Iraq and one insanely ambitious guy with a horse, a sword, and zero chill.
Gaugamela wasn't the final chapter. It was the prologue to a brand new story, one that would echo for centuries.
All right, history fans, time to dive into the historical multiverse. Let's spin the globe and ask the big one. What if Darius had won the Battle of Gaugamela?
That's a spicy one. First off, if Darius holds the field either by killing Alexander, capturing him, or simply routing the Macedonian army, the whole conquest of Persia stops dead in its tracks.
Yeah, remember, Gaugamela was the hinge point. A Persian victory there likely means Alexander retreats, or more likely, dies on the battlefield. No Babylon, no Susa, no Persepolis. The Persian Empire survives.
And we'd probably be talking about Darius the Great, the sequel, who crushed the Macedonian threat and restored Persian dominance. Maybe even reasserts control over Egypt. The Achaemenid Empire might have had another century or more of life.
And here's the wild ripple effect. No Alexander means no Hellenistic world. That whole fusion of Greek and Eastern cultures? Gone. No Alexandria in Egypt. No Greek influence stretching into India.
And that affects everything. Science, philosophy, medicine, all those Greek ideas that spread eastward might have stayed bottled up. Even Rome might have developed differently without the Hellenistic kingdoms laying the groundwork.
Also, real talk, if Alexander dies young in failure instead of as a legend, he probably ends up as a historical footnote instead of the gold standard for military genius.
So yeah, Gaugamela wasn't just a battle. It was a crossroads. And had it gone the other way, the world map, the flow of culture, the legacy of empires, completely different.
Shout out to Alternate Universe Darius. Somewhere out there, he's probably got a colossus of himself built in Persepolis with a plaque that says, "Told you so."
So what's the takeaway from Gaugamela? Don't underestimate a determined underdog with a good plan, and never let your enemy create a gap in your line while you're busy showing off your war elephants.
And maybe don't level the battlefield unless you're 100% sure you're gonna win. Just saying.
That's a wrap on today's episode of the History AI Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please rate, review, and subscribe. A 5-star review really helps us grow and reach more history nerds like you.
And remember, our episodes are evergreen, so you can jump in anytime. Got a topic you want us to cover? Hit us up on social media, links are in the show notes.
Also, check out our brand new merch. T-shirts, mugs, and more. The link's down below.
Thanks for hanging out with us, and as Alexander might say, go out there and conquer your to-do list.
Catch you next time on the History AI Podcast. Stay curious.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.